you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, Nancy Lopez put a smile on the LPGA. She burst onto the scene right out of college with an irresistible personality and an unbeatable game. Or, to put it another way, she'd beat the crap out of you and grin the whole time she was doing it. But don't let that carefree disposition fool you. Nancy's career was littered with challenges both on the course and off. It started when she was just a newborn, put on a train to her adoptive parents, and ended with her induction into the World Golf Hall of Fame. And if her game seemed out of this world, perhaps it's no coincidence that she grew up in Roswell, New Mexico. See what I did there? Nancy, you grew up in Roswell, New Mexico, home of UFOs and aliens. I've noticed you've got very long fingers. It's a little suspicious. Has anyone ever accused you of being an alien?
Well, I had a fan or somebody, I'm not sure what she was, came up to me at a golf tournament, and she asked me, as she walked up to me, "Aren't you from Roswell, New Mexico?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I am." And she said, "Are you an alien?"
Well, it's a pretty big deal when a rookie wins a single tournament, but you went out and won 9 times in your first season, including 5 in a row.
Well, you know, the first tournament that I won was in Sarasota at Bent Tree in January. And, I mean, it just pretty much happened. It was the first tournament of the year. And, you know, when you first get on a tour, my goal was to win one tournament. I mean, that was my goal. And it's like you're always trying to prove something to yourself. Can you win? Can you handle the pressure? Can you par 18? As I played 18 on Sunday, it was a good par 5. You had to lay up your second shot, even as long as I hit it then. So I knew with my one shot lead, I just needed to be smart. So I hit the green in 3, and then I had about a 25 footer. I wasn't really close. And when I hit the first putt, I left it short, probably about 2 feet, which I think most professionals always do. Because of the pressure. As I stood over that 2 footer, I never thought I could take the putter back because I was so scared.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was scared to miss it or just scared because I might win a tournament. But as I stood over it, it would seem like an eternity before I was able to stroke or take the putter back and stroke it towards the hole. And once I made it, it was like this floodgate opened. It was like, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can win. I think it's like that probably for every professional that plays and hopes that they can win that first tournament.
Yeah, but not all of them win 9 the first year.
Well, I never thought about winning 9 my first year, but I know after I won that one, I answered my own question, you know, can I win?
Yeah.
And as I kept playing, it just seemed like every shot was perfect. The fairways were wide, greens were big, holes were big, and it seemed to get easier. And I didn't fear anything. I just wanted to win.
Yeah.
And it just kept happening. And I got more and more comfortable. And I enjoyed the attention.
Well, what do you remember specifically about that week in Hershey?
I remember loving Hershey. It was a great, great golf course. Not an easy golf course. You know, wanting to win my 6th in a row, but it just seemed, I was so tired, it just seemed impossible.
Mm.
I mean, and I was never negative. I just felt like, wow, I'm just so tired. And as I played that week, I just didn't putt well. I mean, that was probably one of the strongest parts of my game was putting. And I remember standing over putts, and McDonald's was one of my favorite places to go eat. And I remember standing over putts going, man, I can't wait to have a quarter pounder of cheese. And no concentration, no focus anymore. I was just so mentally dead.
What was any of how you felt to do with, you felt like maybe you were carrying the load all of a sudden?
Definitely. I think when I started winning those tournaments, the interest of the LPG Tour even grew more. I mean, it was there, but it just grew more and more. I remember crowds were huge. Mm-hmm. When I won my 5th in a row in Rochester, New York, I mean, they were like 4 or 5 deep.
Well, you're adopted, right?
I was in a family that really couldn't keep me. My mother couldn't keep me. And my mother was my dad's sister, the dad that adopted me, Domingo, who everybody knows.
Right.
And so they pretty much shipped me from California, where I was born, on a train with my sister, not my blood sister, and my mom, and brought me back to Roswell, New Mexico.
How old were you at that time?
I was a baby, I was born.
When did you realize that you were adopted?
My mom told me when I was about 6 years old. She said she needed to tell me something. I'm glad that she did. It was important that she told me. But as I look at the time that she told me, I wasn't really curious, but I then did know my aunt, because now that I was with my dad, Domingo, my real mother became my aunt. So right. I always knew her as, her name was Chavela in Spanish.
Yes.
So I always knew her as my Aunt Chavela. And there was something about being loyal to my mom and dad, the ones that raised me.
Yes.
Because I didn't know my mom to be my mom, so I didn't ever, I never looked at her as my mom.
That's such an interesting relationship. I mean, how did your birth mother react to you coming to visit?
I think she treated me like I was her niece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she never talked about being my mom. She did talk to me about my father, who I never met, who he was. She said that she had reached out to him to let him know that I was his daughter. And then he died shortly after that time, so I never met him. And I wasn't really curious to find out who he was. I know that I looked like him, but I look like my dad, Domingo, too, because I have that Lopez blood that I had from his sister.
Well, your father was also your primary teacher. How did he introduce you to the game?
My dad was a good amateur player, and I basically just walked around with him. I didn't play right off the bat, and I would say I was probably walking with him when I was age six.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my dad letting me put his golf shoes on, and you could hear the crunching sound of spikes on pavement. It was intriguing to me, I guess, because I loved it. So I would just put my dad's shoes on, walk around on the pavement all the time.
Well, most little girls put their mom's shoes on.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
But I liked golf shoes.
Yeah.
And so when I went out to the golf course with my mom and dad one day, my dad gave me a golf club for the first time, and he said, "Nancy, every time you swing at the ball, make connection." And that was pretty much my lesson.
That's good advice.
It was. So
well, he had an auto body shop in Roswell. His English wasn't great. It doesn't sound like a country club upbringing to me.
No. My dad was never a poor me, poor us, we're Hispanic, the doors aren't open because we're Hispanic. He just always believed that if you're a good person and you had good work ethics, that doors would open for you. So he never complained about that, even though I knew as I got older that those doors were closed many times.
Yeah.
And I remember him wanting us to be a member at the Roswell Country Club at that time. And, you know, went there to ask if I could be a member by myself because really, he and my mother couldn't afford for all of us to be a member.
Yeah.
And at that time, they just said, you know, they all had to join the golf club. And I, you know, at that time, I never thought much about it. I know my dad was disappointed that I couldn't play at the country club. And I think as I grew older, I realized that they just didn't really want us there. That, and that's
right.
The opinion and the feeling that I felt as I grew older.
How did they manage the expense of your junior career?
He would tell me, "Nancy, there's two tournaments you can play this summer because that's all I can afford." And he would save money for that. And then he'd give my mom money for something in the house or to buy herself a new outfit or something and for bills. So he always kind of figured out where the money was going to go.
Well, we lost Arnold, who I know was a great friend of yours. And at 15 years old, you had the opportunity to play with him the first time. Tell me a little bit about that.
I was invited to play in Pebble Beach in the Bing Crosby, which was many, many years ago. I remember them saying that we were going to play a practice round with Arnold Palmer, and we were thrilled, of course. Oh. He was such a gentleman to us and so kind, and he was with Mark McCormick, who became my agent also as I turned professional at age 19. And we got to play with them, and it was really funny because I tell the story. Marianne Breton was this really pretty blonde girl and 15, and I remember we were laying in our twin beds, and she said, "I think they just think I'm another pretty face, and you're not."
Oh, well, that's nice. There's a compliment
I
in
said,
there
oh, yeah.
somewhere.
Yeah, I said, okay, maybe I'm better golfer than a pretty face. I don't know. But it was kind of funny when she said that. I never forgot it. Back in those days, there were a lot of rules and regulations that women weren't allowed to play on any boy's team. That was body contact.
Right.
I had a civil liberties union lawyer that called me, and she said, "Nancy, would you like to play on the boys' golf team?" I said, "Well, I'm on JV right now because they won't allow me to play on varsity because I'm a girl." And she said, "Well, you know, the only reason is because they say this is a body contact sport, and I don't think it's a body contact sport. Do you?" And I said, "No, ma'am, I don't." And so she said, "Well, I'm going to take it to the Board of Education, and we're going to see if we can get you on the team. And at that time, they changed it. They changed the rule that I could play on the boys' golf team since there was no girls' golf team. And I qualified fourth on the team. We won the state championship for high school one of the years. And it was pretty cool. I mean, the guys on my team wanted me on the team, but the guys on the other team didn't want me.
They didn't want to play you, I'm sure.
Oh, no, they didn't.
Well, as a high school amateur, you drove to the U.S. Ladies Open and were leading after 36 holes and finished tied for second. That must have been a pivotal point for you. I mean, was that the point where you thought, maybe I could do this for a living?
I didn't really know, David, because I loved playing amateur golf, and I remember going to the U.S. Open, and I wasn't really sure at that time what I wanted to do.
What else was there? What would you think of doing?
Well, I wanted to go to school, and I wanted to get a degree in engineering. But at that time, there were no scholarships for any girls. And David Foster with Colgate-Palmolive at that time was a big advocate for women's golf. And I won a partial scholarship from his company, Colgate-Palmolive. Mm-hmm. And with that, when Tulsa University was building this new golf team, they said they would pay for the other half of the scholarship. So I had a full ride, which nobody had at that time.
2 years in, you decided that you want to turn pro. That must have been quite an upheaval.
It was really difficult to decide that because what was happening, you know, I was taking all these engineering classes, and after 2 years, I was pretty much a C student. And we at the golf team were always gone. And I just decided I needed to do one or the other. And I called my dad, and I think he always wanted me to turn professional, but he never made me or never said I had to. And I think it really made him very happy when I called him. I said, Dad, I think I'm going to try the pro tour because I don't think I can give school what I need to. And so I think he was really thrilled with that. And fortunately for me, I was able to do very well. My first check that I made was the week before qualifying, and that was at Hazeltine. My second place check was $7,500. Wow, I'm rich.
Yeah.
So I carried that check with me for like months and months.
Well, you didn't cash it?
And I'd pull it out. Well, I know I wanted to, but I think just being able to see that much money in my hands
right.
was pretty thrilling for me. So I'd pull it out every morning. I'd look at it. I put it back in my purse. I'd pull out the next morning. I'd look at it again. I was just thrilled to have that much money in my hands. And I ended up qualifying the next week for the LPGA Tour. I got my card. And then I finished second in the first three LPGA events I played in after that. And so I started making money pretty quickly. Wasn't a lot, but it was a lot to me.
You know, you're a pretty 21-year-old out there playing golf in front of thousands of people. There had to be some creepy moments.
There were creepy moments.
Yeah.
There were many times that... young guys would follow me back to my hotel or motel back in those days. You know, I never thought about that happening. And then I was at a golf tournament in Birmingham, and someone knocked on my door. And I went and I opened it, and there was this man standing there, young guy, but man. And I looked at him thinking, you know, he's looking for somebody. I said, can I help you? He says, yeah, hi, Nancy. And I said, hi. And I got a little nervous because he knew who I was. And it wasn't like I had won a bunch of tournaments, really. I mean, I had won some, but he knew who I was. And he said, you just smiled at me so nicely at the golf course. And then I got a little nervous, like, okay.
Ooh.
Yeah. So he's standing there and he says, would you like to go on a date tonight? And I said, I already have a date, but I didn't have a date. I just lied. And
women are like that.
and I was really scared. But as I said, I'm sorry, you know, he said, would you like to have a drink after? I said, I don't drink.
Yeah.
And then I did ask him, well, how did you find out what my room number was? And he said, well, when the desk clerk went somewhere, I just went around and looked up your name and found it.
Oh.
And it was awful. And I didn't know how to not make him mad, but yet try and close the door. And I ended up saying, you know, I've got to finish getting ready. And I was able to close the door, and I didn't open anymore, of course. And if anybody would have knocked, I would have pretended nobody was home, because that was just really weird.
At what point do you call the cops?
I didn't think about calling the cops. You know, I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt that he wasn't that weird.
Mm.
And, you know, when you're young like that, you don't think anybody's going to hurt you when you're young like that.
But right at the start of your professional career, you lose your mom.
Yes.
How did that impact you?
It was tough. I think it was harder because I was at a tournament in Dallas, and I didn't go home. And the doctor had told me she was going to be okay. And I said, okay, well, I'll wait to... And my mom and my dad said, I'll be fine. So just come home on Monday.
Yeah.
And she died on Thursday. And it was really tough because I wanted to be with her whenever that time came.
Yeah.
And it was really, really hard because I know when my dad died, I was with him.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure I was with him.
Nancy, this is Rapid Fire, where you give me intelligent answers to stupid questions. Start the clock.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. The theme song of my life is...
How many people are going to be at my funeral?
I think that was a Dean Martin number, wasn't it? Yeah. What's your favorite course to play?
Whistling Straits so far.
Really?
Yes.
I like it too. Boxers or briefs? Oh, that was left over from a George Bush interview. Which golfer had the game that most took your breath away?
Probably Tiger Woods.
Match play or stroke play?
Love match play.
What food is your guilty pleasure?
Pizza.
Pizza. Good. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say oysters, at which point I would hurl. Did aliens really land in Roswell?
I think so.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
When you met Tom Selleck in person, which article of his clothing did you ask for?
Well, back then, we'd always say, we'd like to have his shoes underneath my bed. Ask him for his shoes.
And did you get his shoes?
No, he said he didn't have another pair to put on, so I couldn't get them.
And that is Rapid Fire with Nancy Lopez. Thank you. 48 wins, 4 of them were majors. Why were there not more majors?
Well, the Colgate European was not a major, and it has become a major. Nabisco wasn't a major at that time, and it is a major now.
Mm-hmm.
There are more majors to win now, but there wasn't then.
So in 1981, the Dinah Shore wasn't a major, but it was a pretty big tournament.
Yes.
It was the biggest that you'd won?
Probably, I would think, yes. Yeah, and it was a tournament you wanted to win. It was a tough golf course, and they're only the best players there. And so if you won it, you were really winning an event where you were playing against all the best players.
The U.S. Open was kind of the one that got away from you. Tell me about your struggle to win that one.
It was tough, you know, because I think even as an amateur, I never won the U.S. Amateur. And then I wanted to win the U.S. Open. And finishing second 4 times, the fourth one really hurt the most because I played really well in the other ones. But I still thought I had time to win a U.S. Open. And then before that, I started training with a trainer. I said, you know, maybe I need to just get in better shape. For 2 years, I worked out with a trainer, trying to get ready for whatever U.S. Open happened to come along at that time. I really felt like I was going to win that U.S. Open. I felt great. I didn't feel tired at all. And usually at a U.S. Open, you get really tired because you're playing a golf course that mentally just kills you. And you have to have your best game. You have to hit every shot good. I felt like on Sunday that Allison Nicholas didn't think the mental toughness to beat me because I felt like I was very mentally tough. Every shot I hit good, she hit better. If I stuck one close to the pin, she'd knock it in. And then going up on 18... she had a 1-shot lead on me on a par 5. And it was probably the toughest emotional shot for me to hit because you could reach that green in 2. You had to really hit a great drive. And then your second shot, they were both over hazards. And I had to birdie it to go into the 18-hole playoff you have on Monday. Even before I hit my shot, I'm standing there and the crowd is rooting for me. And I'm having to keep myself intact because I get very emotional, and I was trying not to go there. And that was the toughest shot for me ever, I think, that I ever had to stand over. And then, like I said, fighting back tears because I knew I wanted this, and I knew it was probably going to be the last time I could ever win a U.S. Open. And when I hit it, it hit on this side of this one. It kind of jumped forward. So I had about a 15-footer coming back. With all those people yelling, I had to almost just throw them out of my head. I shot 469s that week and didn't win the U.S. Open. Mm. And it was it's still kind of emotional for me. I had a really tough time for about a year. I never had emotional breakdown like I did for that U.S. Open. I lost it again and really thought it was my tournament to win, and I didn't win it. I really struggle with that. And as the press would ask me for many, many times after that second, I cried. I just couldn't get over the emotional feeling of not being able to win it. It was tough. Yeah. It really was.
Well, a portal that played a role in, you know, towards the end of your career. Tell me a little bit about that.
In your career, you realize how focused you are. And I think a lot of people always ask me, you know, can you teach somebody to focus? Or, you know, what is it? How can you focus the way that you did? I said, you just focus. I never had to think about it. And I remember being in Portland, Oregon, at the end of my career, where I was playing a little bit less. And it's the ninth green, and I'm at the back of the green. I have about a 25, 30-footer. And, you know, I'm reading it, and I'm really focused. I really feel good about it. I'm trying to make this putt. And I stand over the ball, and I look at the hole. And as I come back to look at my ball, I hear this porta-potty door slam. And I went, wow, I heard that porta-potty door slam. I've never heard a porta-potty door slam. I'm not focused. I mean, this is all going through my head. Maybe I need to go home. And that's when I realized that I wasn't focusing anymore.
Yeah.
And it really bothered me.
Yeah. I mean, did you wonder whether the person washed their hands or not? I mean, was that...
No, not most things.
Your caddy, Roscoe, played a key role in your career. What was that relationship like?
Roscoe was a character. He was a good soul. He was good to all the caddies, always loaned the money, even though he didn't have money. I mean, I loved him so much that I hired him and fired him seven times. Yeah, seven times. Well, he did like to drink.
Oh, and, shock and amazement. A caddy that likes to drink?
And I remember one day I was standing beside him. I thought, man, he must have drank a lot last night. Because I thought it was coming out of his sweat, the pores. But it was coming out of his breath because he was drinking while he was caddying for me. So I went up to him one time. He was sitting on the end, the butt of my golf bag. And I said, Roscoe, did you have Coke in there? Because he had a Coke cup. And I walked up to him, and I said, can I have a drink of that? I don't usually drink out of anybody's cup, but I just needed a drink. And he was kind of hesitant to give it to me. And then all of a sudden, I saw it was beer. And I didn't fire him that moment, but I said, I don't want to ever see you have a beer in your hand on the golf course. Well, I'm sure I fired him because of one of those, but I remember I was never a player that really blamed my caddy for a bad yardage. I just didn't. But I was in Hilton Head, and I was on the ninth hole, and I hit a shot, and it blew the green, just blew it over the green. And I knew it'd give me the wrong yardage. He must have added instead of subtracted, because I looked over at him. I said, Roscoe, what was the yardage there? It was right. I said, I just blew the green. I'm not winning a tournament right now. There's no adrenaline. There's no reason why I should blow that green. Oh, you're a baby. I could feel the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I said, and you're fired. And I really meant it. Yeah. So I thought for sure he wasn't going to carry my bag from that point on, but he did, because once we were done, he begged for his job back in the parking lot. Yeah. And I gave it back to him.
I heard that you're a Jordan Spieth fan. When did you meet him?
I met him this past year at the Masters, and we're at the driving range, and I knew he was on the practice putting green right there by the driving range. And
now you're stalking.
Yeah, so I was stalking. Okay, I'll get there. So I see that little pathway, and I start running when I see him coming this way. And I run up to the fence, and I look at him. I say, Jordan, I'm Nancy Lopez, and I'd really love to meet you. And Ed describes this to me. He said he never saw me do that to anybody, but a lot of people do that to me. He said it was hysterical. I looked like a little teenage girl like at a concert. And he walked over to me, and he was just as sweet as he could be. And he said, it's really an honor to meet you.
Did you ever feel tempted to, you know, the way Annika did, go play in a PGA Tour event?
Well, if they would have asked me, I would have. Mm-hmm. And I think when Annika went to Colonial, you know, they invited her to go play. I don't think it was like goal of hers to play with the guys. She's not like that. And I talk about Annika many times with that event, because I think Annika was a really good player before she went to Colonial. After Colonial, she became a great player.
Yeah.
Because she could let go. She would hit a shot and wave to the crowd. And I think a lot of players don't realize that they can let go because they're all good players, but they're afraid that they can't get back into the focus. In my mind, as I watched Annika, she realized she could do that at Colonial. And then after that, then there came this love affair with the fans because she made a connection. I mean, that's just what I was observing. But I think she really became that great player after Colonial, even though she'd won quite a bit before. One thing that happened, too, when Annika stepped away from golf, I hated it. You know, she should have stayed there and kept playing. But she said she wanted to have children. So I kind of nudged her a little bit. I said, she said she's really had proven all she needed to prove. And I said, no, you haven't. You have to prove if you can win after you have a baby. Then you've proven something. And I thought for sure, because I nudged her, that she might come back out on tour and play, because we really needed her during that time, because our tour needed somebody that the fans could follow, and she was that player, I thought. And Lorraine Ochoa, they both kind of left pretty close at the same time to have babies, too.
You played pregnant, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, my doctor said I could do it, because I, you know, been playing golf all my life. I won one tournament when I was 5 months pregnant
with
Tori, my youngest. The thing about having babies, or at least the first one, you know, I won, and now I have a baby. And I felt different after I had Ashley. There was a something internally that changed, and I kept thinking, am I ever going to be able to win again? Because it was that kind of feeling, emotional feeling inside, that I didn't feel as mean internally.
Right.
But I was able to win after Ashley, and then one after Aaron, and then one after Tori. And back then, we didn't have daycare. So to be able to travel with all this luggage, all these babies, as I look back at it, I'm like, wow, how did I really do that? Because now that I'm older, I get more tired, of course. And you're like, wow, you can only have children when you're young and have that kind of career to be able to have the stamina to do that. And if I wouldn't have had children, I hope that I could have won more tournaments, but I'd rather have my three daughters.
Yeah. How big a deal was it for you to captain the 2005 Solheim Cup team?
Out of all the tournaments I won, that was my best win, was being the captain. And I think, you know, being on any U.S. team or being a captain of a United States team, because I always say I bleed red, white, and blue because I love my country. And to be able to captain a team that was so fabulous. And in the Solheim Cup, I played in the first Solheim Cup in 1990, the inaugural. You know, how far the Solheim Cup has come.
Yeah.
And how the crowds are just... they're so cool to have all these people rooting for the U.S. and all these people rooting for Europe. But then to have the talent that I had on that team. I mean, it was so fun watching them for 2 years, trying to make them a team. Because you have 12 women to 15 women, because I kept inviting 15 people to our dinners because they were all in contention. I figured if I threw all these women together every time I got to, there's going to be something they liked about each other. And I didn't do email and I didn't do texting. I called them because they weren't going to say no to me on the phone.
Yeah.
So I'd say, we're going to do this dinner or we're going to do this. You're coming, right? And they always came. I had a great team. It was really a lot of fun being a part of that.
I kind of like having kids.
Really? Well, I mean, they're all.
Yeah.
Well, besides Julie Inkster was on my team, and Beth Daniel and Meg Mallon. So I was not their mother, but the rest of them, I was like a mother to them.
How much of your life is about being a grandmother now?
It's amazing being a grandmother to see your children having children.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I'd like to be able to teach Molly golf, because all my girls never really picked up the game, be a part of a little golf career. I don't really care if she turns professional. I just want her to play golf because it's such a great game.
Well, for the first time in your life, you're a country club person. Didn't start out that way. What's that life like for you?
A life I never had before. You know, being a professional golfer, you just never stayed anywhere or became a part of a country club, even though you're probably a member there. You never went to dinner there with your friends and, you know, a really nice relationship with your friends, which I've always had friends, but not that kind of relationship, because now... I live in a community called Piper's Landing. My boyfriend is from there.
Your fiancé.
Just
show us the ring, by the way.
Oh.
It's a beautiful color.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But being there with Ed, we play a lot. But we play, I had gotten a phone call from my daughter. She said, Mom, what are you doing today? I said, well, we're playing, Ed and I play partners, and we play with another couple, and we play in this thing called Twilight. She says, well, what's that, Mom? I said, I described what we play in, and I said, well, I said, last time we played, Ed and I won $25 pro shop credit. And she starts laughing and just laughs. And I said, I know it's kind of funny, but I said, but I'm a country club girl now.
Yeah.
It's really a nice change in my life to be able to do something that I haven't done. And I'm 59 years old now, and I just started doing that. So it's really, it's a good time in my life that now I get to enjoy what I've worked so hard for, to have that life of a country club player.
Well, you've come a long way, a little Latino girl, Roswell, New Mexico, the land of UFOs and aliens, to multiple major champion, World Golf Hall of Fame. Thank you so much for spending this time with
Thanks,
me, Nancy.
Thanks, David. Thank you.
Nancy was a trailblazer in so many ways. She opened the door for women in golf. She opened the door for Latinos in golf. But most importantly, she opened a door and let us all in. That's because she was determined not to let that trailblazing turn her into anything she wasn't. She won as a rookie. She won as a mother. She even won while she was pregnant. And all along the way, she won our hearts. Thanks for joining me tonight. If you want some more, and why wouldn't you, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just don't follow me on the highway. I've gotten run over a bunch of times, and I'm kind of jumpy. I'll see you next time. Good night, sweetie.